Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Tuesday, the 17th of December, as the death toll continues to rise in Mayotte following Cyclone Chido, aid organizations on the ground warn that the situation is worse than catastrophic. The Maronite Archbishop of Aleppo speaks of the need for caution and collaboration as Syria navigates an uncertain future. But first, on his 88th birthday, Pope Francis releases a new autobiography entitled Hope. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo. It is Pope Francis's birthday today. He turns 88. To mark the occasion, the Pope has released several excerpts from his autobiography entitled Hope, which will hit bookshelves in January. In his autobiography, the Pope recounts his childhood in Buenos Aires and says British intelligence helped stop two assassination attempts on his life during his 2021 apostolic visit to Iraq. Devon Watkins reports.
Pope Francis's autobiography, Hope, hits bookshelves in mid-January. Several excerpts were released on Tuesday as the Pope celebrated his 88th birthday. In it, he recalls his childhood growing up in the barrios of Buenos Aires in Argentina and the multi-ethnic, multi-religious, and multicultural microcosm. Differences were normal and we respected each other, he says, pointing to his relationships with Catholic, Jewish, and Muslim friends. He recalls seeing prostitutes on the streets of Buenos Aires, calling them an image of the darkest and most difficult side of existence. As a bishop, he celebrated Mass for some of these women who had reformed their lives, saying they were like contemporary Magdalenes. The Pope recounts his friendship with Father José de Paula, known as Father Pepe, a Villero priest serving in the slums, whom he supported through a vocational crisis. Speaking about these liminal areas where the state was absent and drug abuse was rife, the Pope affirms that the Church must increasingly make these peripheral areas its center. Faith, he says, is not the opium of the people, but an expression of pastoral and civic commitment and service. Reflecting on his historic apostolic journey to Iraq in 2021, Pope Francis describes the arrow to the heart represented by Mosul. Viewed from a helicopter, he says the territory looked like an X-ray of hatred, one of the most effective sentiments of our time. He tells of receiving warning from British intelligence about two assassination attempts that had been planned during his visit to Mosul, one by a woman strapped with explosives, another involving a truck. Both attackers were intercepted and killed by Iraqi police. "This struck me deeply," Pope Francis emphasizes. "It was like a poison fruit of war." Amid all the hatred, the Pope expresses appreciation for his meeting with the Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani. He says that encounter held in the Ayatollah's home was held in a spirit of great fraternity and hope. I'm Devon Watkins.
Pope Francis has sent a message to young people in Rome. The Roman branch of ACLI, the Italian Christian Workers Association, organized an event on Tuesday aiming to introduce students to the world of work. In a message sent by Pope Francis for the occasion, he told the students that the world is opening itself before you, and stressed, "It may appear crowded and distracted as you arrive, but it lacks your contribution. I want to tell each one of you that you bring something new to the world. With you, everything, truly everything, can change." Meanwhile, as the death toll continues to rise in Mayotte, a race against time is underway in the archipelago to rescue survivors and provide assistance to the thousands of people left stranded by Cyclone Chido. This devastating storm struck Mayotte on Saturday with winds of more than 200 kilometres per hour, damaging housing, government buildings and key infrastructure. Vatican News spoke to Marc Boulteau of Secours Catholique, who confirmed that the situation is worse than catastrophic and that it will take at least a decade for the territory to recover. Lisa Zingarini reports.
In the aftermath of Cyclone Chido, Marc Boulteau describes the situation in Mayotte as truly apocalyptic. The storm has razed to the ground many makeshift slums where one-third of Mayotte's residents live. "This means that at least 100,000 people are now homeless," explained Boulteau, who has been constantly exchanging updates with his teams on site. "Many are undocumented migrants who are often reluctant to go to state-run shelters for fear of being deported. The cyclone's destruction was not limited to informal housing, but also damaged buildings and critical infrastructure such as the airport, fire stations, hospitals and roads. On Monday, the provisional death toll stood at 20, but authorities fear it could reach the hundreds. Bulto explained that identifying victims will be particularly challenging, also because undocumented migrants are unlikely to report casualties. Meanwhile, since Monday, rescuers have started reaching all parts of the archipelago. Bulto said that the local hospital is already overwhelmed by the sheer number of the severely injured people rescued. Residents are facing water shortages and power cuts and a looming food crisis. Existing food reserves in Mayotte are minimal, and the destruction of local agriculture has left them dependent on external aid, which is, however, difficult to deliver. Amid the devastation, Bulto highlighted the resilience of the people of Mayotte and the selflessness of local volunteers, including those from Secours Catholique, who began helping their communities even before attending to their own losses. According to Bulto, it will take at least a decade for Mayotte to fully recover from the disaster. Its road to recovery will be slow, he said, and will demand sustained efforts from the international community. I am Lisa Zengarini.
The European Union on Tuesday announced it will establish contacts with Syria's new leadership and reopen its delegation in the country. The EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen also said the EU would increase humanitarian aid to Syria. But von der Leyen warned of the risk of a resurgence by hardline Islamic State militants and said that this must not be allowed to happen. Syria is facing a fragile political transition following the fall of Bashar al-Assad 2 weeks ago after a lightning campaign by the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham Islamic rebel group. Amid widespread celebrations across the country, the Maronite Archbishop of Aleppo speaks of the need for caution and collaboration as the nation navigates an uncertain future.
Archbishop Youssef Toubir, the head of the Maronite Catholics in Aleppo, described a relative calm in the northern Syrian city, but noted that isolated violence continues, particularly in the capital, Damascus. Speaking to Vatican Radio, he expressed concern over the widespread use of weapons, even among children. Expressing cautious optimism regarding the role of rebel groups like Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which played a key part in Assad's downfall, he said the group does not appear to be fanatical. They treat us Christians with respect, he added, and there is no form of persecution at present. He also pointed to the promises made by Syria's interim prime minister, Mohammed al-Bashir, who pledged to protect minorities, women and children, and to restore justice across the nation. The world is watching Syria now, he said. These promises cannot just be propaganda. Without tangible progress, Syria will struggle to gain international recognition. Now is the time, Archbishop Toubir continued, for Syrian Christians to step forward and contribute to rebuilding their country. After decades of totalitarian rule, where others made decisions for us, the Archbishop said we must now find our voice and contribute to building a civil and democratic state that respects all people. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Elsewhere, the head of the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has reported that more than 14,500 young people have been killed in Gaza, with the total death toll surpassing 45,000, according to Gaza's authorities. Meanwhile, humanitarian aid agencies continue to appeal for a ceasefire to care for the victims and distribute desperately needed food aid. Thaddeus Jones tells us more.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has reported that overnight, 13 people died and 48 were injured during an Israeli airstrike that came without warning. A number of children were among the victims. Humanitarian agencies have condemned the latest deadly airstrikes across the war-torn Gaza Strip, including on a UN school-turned-shelter. The UN reports that some of the victims had been forcibly displaced 7 or 8 times already, ending up in this UNRWA school that was bombed. The latest violence came as the head of the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, Executive Director Catherine Russell, stated more than 14,500 young people have been reportedly killed in Gaza, with many thousands more believed to be buried under the rubble. She also sounded the alarm on famine that continues to loom in the north, while humanitarian access remains severely restricted, she says. These grim developments came at the same time authorities in Gaza reported that more than 45,000 people have been killed in the enclave in the last 14 months. Catherine Russell stated on social media that virtually all 1.1 million children in Gaza are in urgent need of protection and mental health support. The head of emergency communications for the World Food Program, Jonathan Dumont, told UN News in an interview that civilians are desperate for life-saving aid and there's a growing risk of widespread famine. He described the level of devastation across the Gaza Strip as absolutely staggering, and that many people have been displaced multiple times. Their families are living either in tents or in the rubble of collapsed buildings with no access to electricity or running water. He says that everyone has lost their home and many are living in tents without access to meals or the distributions that are taking place. He says to prevent a famine, all efforts need to be found to allow for a consistent flow of food aid to come in. An absence of a ceasefire, every effort must be made to make sure this happens. Thaddeus Jones.
And finally, with the countdown to the Jubilee of 2025 nearly at the end, both Rome and the Vatican are gearing up to welcome the millions of pilgrims projected to descend upon the city. Both St. Peter's Square and the Basilica are being renovated and updated in time for the Holy Year. And as Kelsey Gussie reports, for many pilgrims, this might be the only opportunity to visit some of the most important gems of Catholicism, including four major relics tucked away in the Basilica.
Since the first Jubilee in 1300, pilgrims from all over the world have traveled to Rome to see what in the West has been called the most important image of Christ, the relic of the Holy Face, or Veronica's veil. Tradition holds it is the cloth Veronica used to wipe Christ's bloodied face on his way of the cross, and an image of his face was miraculously imprinted on this cloth. The veil's presence in St. Peter's Basilica dates back to reports in the 8th century. In ancient times, it was displayed frequently, especially during holy years or major events in the church, or even to ward off earthquakes, plagues, and famines. Today, the tradition of displaying the veil still continues, but only on the 5th Sunday of Lent. But Veronica's veil is not the only major relic in St. Peter's. Another three relics are housed in the Basilica, along with the sacred lance of St. Longinus, the wood of the cross, and the head of St. Andrew. The lance used by St. Longinus to pierce Christ's side was preserved among the sacred treasures in Constantinople. It was given to Pope Innocent VIII in 1492. Pilgrims are still able to venerate the lance during the second week of Lent. The third major relic is wood from the cross where Jesus hung, and it was found in Palestine by St. Helena, mother of the Emperor Constantine. It has been kept in the Vatican for centuries. Finally, the head of St. Andrew, brother of St. Peter, arrived in Rome at the request of Pope Pius II in 1462. For the estimated 32 million pilgrims set to come to Rome in the next year, they will have the opportunity to enter St. Peter's Basilica and see where each of these relics is housed in the four massive statues surrounding the main altar of the Basilica. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
And that is all we have time for today. My thanks go to Gustavo Messina, our sound engineer in studio, and thank you to you for listening. Until next time, I'm Francesca Merlo.